Alrighty, welcome to the Barstool Bookrunners podcast. My name is Josh. Hope everyone had a good week. This is going to be a bit of an interesting podcast. So, we had a bit of trouble kind of figuring out a good time to get together with Matt Wiltsy for Managing Madrid earlier in the week. My schedule just couldn't really make it work. So we were chatting with Matt this evening, or recording this on Thursday, to discuss some of the details from El Clasico. I know it's been a few days, and there was another Barcelona loss in between El Clasico and today. The loss resulting in Ronald Koeman finally being sacked after one of the most poor winning percentages of a Barcelona manager in recent history. Xavi is thought to be the manager to replace him. Mundo are reporting that he has already agreed to take the job, but his departure from Al Sadd must first be negotiated. It's probably going to take a little bit of time. Barcelona B coach Sergi is going to, or Sergei, I'm not sure, is going to be the interim manager. Basically, talks between Barcelona and Xavi's agent were apparently supposed to start today. There's already been contact, I would guess, between whether it's an intermediary or some sort of discussion between Xavi and Barcelona. There's of course other guys that are being floated about. I think Roberto Martinez, Antonio Conte is not coming. He's going to be Manchester United's manager. Actually, let me Google that. Let me see if that's already happened. Antonio Conte, let's see. Is he already the manager? No, surely not, right? Manchester Evening News, 12 hours ago. Okay, so apparently Conte said yes if the job is on the table. Okay, cool. Conte's not coming to Barcelona. It's Roberto Martinez or Xavi, most likely Xavi, unless something strange comes of that. The on-the-pitch stuff, and we're going to talk about that with Matt in terms of El Clasico. In terms of the loss on Wednesday, I mean, like, Busquets was horrible. Dest did not look good. Memphis, of course, misses the penalty. It was just horrible. Here's the Ronald Koeman stat. Thank you, Jill, for putting this in your five talking points. Ronald Koeman has won 28 of his 48 games as Barcelona coach in La Liga, the worst winning percentage of a coach since Antich won 9 of 18 with a minimum of 5 games. So, you know, we've talked a lot about Ronald Koeman on this podcast for obvious reasons. I would say that firing him is not going to fix all the problems. I think everybody knows that. Barcelona are where they are in La Liga for a reason. They're where they are in the Champions League for a reason. Maybe they get a little bump, you know, post-manager blues bump kind of thing. But in terms of the performances on the pitch, like, Ronald Koeman isn't playing for these players. He's not playing for Philippe Coutinho. He's not playing for Memphis Depay. He's not playing for the midfield. He's not playing for the defense. And those guys are going to have to pick it up. There's just, like, there is talent there. It just remains to be seen whether or not that talent is capable of putting a competent showing together as a complete team. So whoever's in charge next, good luck. It's not going to be easy. And yeah, so let's get to the interview with Matt. And if you're not subscribed to the podcast, be sure to do so. And here we go. All right, everybody. I am joined by our old pal, Matt Wiltsy from Managing Madrid. Matt, how are we doing?
Hey, Josh, I'm doing well. Looking forward to our discussion as always. And there's a lot that's happened. I mean, I know we're going to discuss the Clásico, but there's a lot that's happened in between even.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be like a simple, you know, like, hey, Barcelona were kind of plucky in that match, right? Like, they played somewhat well for a ninth place team in La Liga, and then we sacked our manager. We'll get to that later. Of course, both of our teams are in turmoil right now. You guys just drew with Osasuna. You're only in second place in the league, so you guys are obviously struggling as much as we are. In terms of the Clásico, at least from my perspective, and I think kind of the consensus was that Barcelona were actually like a little bit, at least at first, friskier than most thought. What surprised you about Barcelona in that match?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first 20 minutes or so, it just took Madrid forever to get into the match. Like, I can't even think of three passes that were strung together in Barcelona's half. So I think Madrid kind of took a little while to warm up, to weather, and they had to weather that storm in the first 15, 20 minutes of just Barcelona dominating possession. I'm trying to think back, and I really, Barcelona, despite all that pressure and having so much of the ball, they didn't really create anything. And I think
that's kind of how we like to do it.
Yeah. And that was pretty much the story of the match. I mean, the only good opportunity was that Dest opportunity, and obviously Aguero's late consolation goal. But even then, Alaba slipped right before that goal. So I think the Dest chance, which I know everyone's talked about ad nauseum, but that really was like the opportunity of the match for Barcelona.
It also seemed to wake Madrid up a little bit. Like, just like the fact that, oh, these guys are actually like, they had a chance to score, so now we have to try. Was there a player that stuck out to you from Barcelona that you thought was decent?
I was expecting more from Ansu Fati for sure, because I've just been so impressed with him and how quickly he's come back from that horrible injury. And like, even pre-injury, I remember that one game he had for Spain, actually in the Alfredo Di Stefano Stadium. I forget who, I think it was against Ukraine. And he was just unstoppable in that game. I was like, oh my God, is Barcelona really going to develop a kid that there's no chance he's going to be as good as Messi, but like someone that's really going to be a Ballon d'Or type level talent player. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. He's 17. He's this good. And so I'll be honest, I was expecting a little bit more from Ansu Fati in terms of who impressed me. Probably Busquets. I thought he's probably,
come on.
I think Busquets is the only one that really was the only one that maybe played like Memphis didn't play well. Ansu Fati didn't play well. Gavi definitely didn't play well. We were kind of making fun of him on the Managing Madrid podcast because Barca fans have hyped him up so much. And I did not think he was good at all in this match. Mingueza and Vinicius pretty much retired him. Who else? I don't know, Eric Garcia, and I've never been impressed by him. I don't think he's at the Barca level. He's great on the ball, but off the ball, he's got a lot of issues. And so no one else really impressed me.
It's great. Busquets followed up his impressive performance by just like gifting Radamel Falcao a goal in our loss yesterday. So that was awesome. Was there a player from the Madrid side? Actually, let's just get to it. So my notes from the match once again reminded of how furious I am that David Alaba was allowed to go to Real Madrid. I just feel like someone should have stepped in and stopped that. And frankly, I blame myself for writing blog posts for 2 years talking about how he was thinking about Barcelona when his contract ran out due to reports in Spain. Only for him to go to Real Madrid and do what he's been doing. Even in the somewhat depressing draw that you guys had this week, in your player ratings, I think he got a 7. How impressed are you with David Alaba in his short tenure at Real Madrid so far?
Yeah, he's quickly become a fan favorite, and that's saying something considering the man he's replaced. And he's taken that number 4. He's replaced Sergio Ramos. Obviously if not the greatest defender to ever play for the club, one of the best players to ever play for the club, a living legend. And Alaba had to step into those shoes. And honestly, he's been foot perfect up to this point. He's been a leader at the back, like almost immediately since entering into the side. You can see in games, like he's so vocal. He's leading that back line. He's the guy back there that's just dictating where everybody goes, pushing the line up. And I mean, we need that after Ramos left, and he's stepped in like it was no problem to this new team and just taking on that leadership role. And then just his on ball, I mean, his defensive capabilities and his physicality, his speed, all that is just, everybody knows how great he is in that department. But for me, just his on ball ability, I knew he was going to be talented in that respect, but I'm just even more impressed seeing him game in and game out. Like he provides that first exit ball from outside, from out of the back. Like, he's the one that starts your build-up play along with Toni Kroos. And having those two so close to each other and just two great ball players, two guys that can thread a needle of a pass, like, it's really nice to have someone of David Alaba's caliber back there.
And when you said legend at first, I'm not going to lie, I was like racking my brain, like, who's he talking about? And then you obviously went on. I think that says a lot. But I think also, too, if you take like the on-field leadership that that I think you saw from Alaba at the Euros with Austria, and then you kind of just, you know, no shade to the Austrian national team, right? But you upgrade the talent that surrounds that now at Madrid, and, you know, good things are going to happen. Toni Kroos. So when Casemiro, you know, kind of does his Casemiro thing and it's real give or take, is there a better midfielder in the world to compliment when Casemiro does bad Casemiro things than Toni Kroos?
I really don't think there is. I mean, Toni Kroos was probably our saving grace, especially in that first half. Like I mentioned, when we couldn't string more than three passes together, Casemiro, as you said, is doing Casemiro things and was a culprit at just giving the ball away countless times in our own half. And so we always talk about how with Casemiro, it's kind of like, is he a net positive? For the most part, he is a net positive, but I think in that first half, at least, he was not. And he was just giving away the ball in dangerous places. And thank God we had Toni Kroos, because he basically, this is what he does. He calms the team down. He allows them to breathe just by retaining possession and just by finding the right pass and playing it to the player's strong foot in their running path, like just literally putting every pass on a dime, never misplacing a pass, never just feeling anxiety or anything under pressure. Like, he just is so calm, cool, and collected. And he's even said on countless occasions that he doesn't get nervous before matches. And that's just crazy to me. Like, it's the Champions League final. He still doesn't get nervous. And you can see it in the way he plays. He is just, I mean, I don't think we'll see a player like him. I mean, he's once in a generation type player. So we may not see another player like him for 20 years or so. And I rate him that highly. And I just think he's against Barcelona, especially in the Clásico, he was probably one of our best players.
So if you had to guess how old Toni Kroos is, and you might know this offhand, how old would you say he is?
I think he's 31 or 32.
Okay, you guessed that he's 31. I didn't know he was that young, honestly. I thought he was older.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say you thought he was younger.
No, I mean, it just feels like he's been like...
Yeah, he has been around forever.
He's been around... I mean, he's been at Real Madrid since 2014 now, which is crazy. But is like his presence in the world, just like kind of just the football thought process, is like one of the best midfielders in the world. It just doesn't seem like... I don't know, for me, I guess I was hoping it was going to be over sooner than it was, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be, maybe he'll get bored like Lewandowski and he'll decide like he wants to go somewhere else. And then I guess I thought he was Luka Modric's age. I thought he was like 36.
Oh, no. Yeah, Luka's definitely older. And I mean, it's crazy how Luka's been able to sustain this long. But I mean, you look across, look at the longevity of Gerard Piquet, Sergio Busquets. Like, there's other guys. There's guys all across the board.
Just because you keep your job doesn't mean you're still world class, though. At least in the case of Busquets.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Moments, but
that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think Busquets for Spain is still world class. I think it's just the system that Koeman had with Barcelona that's hurt him. But yeah, I mean, there's some of these guys. It's just crazy to think about like how long they've been around. Like, they were all here during the Mu and Pep era, and that feels like a lifetime ago now.
So on a scale of like 1 to 10, how confident are you that Kylian Mbappe is going to be a Real Madrid player in the next 12 months?
9.5.
Really?
Yes.
So you don't think Messi is just like kind of slowly just like, you know, working his, like, just hoping he can, maybe
I don't
Messi
think
wants
so.
Him to leave. I don't know.
I think Messi wants him to stay, but I just don't think it's going to be enough. I think Mbappe wants to be the man. I think he's kind of over the project of Paris. I think he's had his mind made up for a while.
I think we're all over the project of Paris, to be honest.
Yeah, seriously. It hasn't gotten going at all. I mean, it's crazy. I've watched some of their matches and it's just not clicking at all.
And the thing is, even if it does get going and they win something, no one's going to be happy for them.
Yeah. Well, we've been signing off our podcast when we do like Zoom podcasts with patrons or live podcasts, we sign it off with a la Madrid PSG. So that tells you where our sentiment is at. But yeah, I think everyone's kind of with that at that point with PSG. And I really think that Mbappe, just like, if he was going to sign for PSG, he would have done it already. I think this summer was really the tipping point for me. I was just beyond like shocked at how much he was willing to just dig his heels in, reject whatever PSG said, like, and just be adamant about it's Real Madrid or nothing. So that, I mean, he's already become like a legend in our eyes just because of all this and how he's behaved. So Madrid fans are definitely, it feels like the prophecy is finally happening for us, because this has been so many years in the making. Oh, every yeah. year it's yes, like Mbappe is coming. And so finally it's going to happen.
So if you had to guess, would you say you guys give PSG something nice and it happens in January? Or I think the optimal move for you guys, obviously, is to wait till another summer and get him on a free, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's going to happen. I think he'll probably sign a pre-agreement. They won't say anything. They won't announce it until like the summer when the season's over, because Mbappe still has to play with PSG and deal with the wrath of the PSG fans and everything like that. But I think they'll probably sign a pre-agreement like they did with Alaba in this past year. And everybody will kind of know it's done, but not 100% official. And then the summer will roll around and he's a Madrid player.
Yeah, that's great. Let's talk about, I have like one, actually, you know, let's just get to it now. Is Eden Hazard alive? Does he still play for Real Madrid?
He made an appearance against Osasuna, but it was not a good appearance. He was once again just a shadow of the player he used to be. And it's really, I mean, I thought he could maybe turn it around, but I've given up all hope of that. Like, I just don't think he'll ever be the player he was. And we're going on 3 years now. It's almost 3 years since he arrived.
Worse transfer than Philippe Coutinho?
I think so.
I think so too. How crazy is that?
Yeah. He's a worse transfer for us than Kaká. And like, a lot of people didn't think, like, just because of how much we spent on Kaká and the return we got, Hazard's definitely worse. He's the most expensive signing in our history, to put it in perspective. Like, it's been that bad.
That's crazy. So do you think he rides it out for like another year or two, or do you think you offload him somewhere, maybe a loan deal or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Mbappe does come, they're going to try and find any potential way to get him out that they can, even if it is a loan deal and we have to pay like half his wages like we did with Bale the other year. I just think they're going to be trying to push him out, and it's whether or not Hazard kind of pulls all the stops out and says, no, I don't want to leave, and just refuses to budge, kind of like Bale has done in the past. And those two contracts, like having Bale and Hazard's contracts on our books this year has definitely been a financial burden for the club. And that's why I think they weren't really open to making any moves besides the Mbappe move this summer. Obviously Camavinga happened once we knew Mbappe probably wasn't going to, but I think having those two contracts on your books is just, they take up a huge percentage of the wage bill, just those two alone. So getting Bale off next year, and potentially if you can remove Hazard, that would be, I mean, that frees up a lot of space for wages.
Wait, so there's no contract renewal talk with Bale happening right now?
No. Bale, Marcelo, Isco, they all potentially are off the books next year.
Okay, so what happened with Isco?
Honestly, I don't, like, he played really well against Levante earlier in the season. He had like a man of the match performance. Everybody was talking about how he's come back from preseason so in shape. Ancelotti is going to get the best out of him. He's playing in a deeper central midfield role. And now all of a sudden he never played poorly when he played, but now all of a sudden he just never plays. He's not even in the rotation at all. So his contract's up in 6 months. Like, I think the writing's on the wall. I think it's kind of sad because he's one of those guys that's been here just actually longer than Toni Kroos. And he's been here since 2013. And he's won 4 Champions Leagues. Like, he's been around. He's been part of that team and part of that generation. And it's kind of weird how his career's unfolded. It's progressively gotten worse. Yeah, it's progressively gotten worse. So I just hope that when he does move, like, wherever he goes, I actually think he might go to Sevilla. wherever he does go, I just hope he plays and like kind of returns to his best, the best of Isco, and gets a ton of minutes, and so we can still enjoy his career.
I mean, he was so much fun to watch, and like I know he still has flashes, like you mentioned earlier this season, but I just don't see him that much because I don't watch every Madrid match, obviously. And so, but when he was at his peak, I mean, oh my gosh, like, I don't have to tell you, but he was such an entertaining midfielder, and the depth that you guys had, and the depth is still there, but when he was excellent, but still like couldn't get a start, it was just, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. Vinicius Jr. Am I saying his name right, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So there was the Gerard Piqué quotes where he basically said Barcelona had him and had him wrapped up, and then Real Madrid flew in and offered him double or whatever. I guess my question, like obviously he's great. How is Mbappe, Vinicius, and Benzema going to work? Are they just going to be a front three and you're just going to throw Mbappe out to the right or the left and figure it out?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I think maybe Mbappe starts on the right and then they just kind of interchange as the match goes on. The one thing is Vinicius is, for some reason, he's terrible out on the right. We've seen him there a couple times before and no manager ever puts him out there because he's for some reason, like it all goes out the door with him when he goes on the right. He can't, none of his magic works, none of his dribbling skills, he can't cross, like it's just not a good look. And so I don't know if he'll be interchanging that much to the right wing, but we'll see, because I think Mbappe's probably preferred position is on the left wing. So we'll see how that all mixes together.
Has he ever played like, could you have Mbappe and Benzema up top with Vinicius like right behind them in like an attacking midfield role?
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of like neutering what he does well, though.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways, good for you guys. Let's talk a little bit about Barcelona, just from the Real Madrid perspective. Who are you, whether it's for comedic value, whether it's because you want Barcelona to be good again, so the rivalry is there, who do you want Barcelona to hire as manager?
I mean, all I've seen is Xavi. And I just think that, Real Madrid fans hate Xavi. We hate Xavi just because of his snide comments all the time and just like how he thinks he's the ultimate philosopher and how the grass needs to be cut super short and all this different stuff. Like, so just to maybe heat up the Clasicos again, because they've been kind of lukewarm lately. I think it might be nice to have Xavi just because I think the fire might turn up a little bit with him in the hot seat, and Real Madrid fans would love to continue this streak of Clasico wins with Xavi as manager. Neutral standpoint, like I just feel like it's strange to see all these coaches, like former players, get pushed so quickly. And Xavi's now another one. Like you would think a natural stepping stone would be to another La Liga team.
Well,
first,
you know that's your fault, right?
Yeah. Well, it's actually your fault with Pep, all of Pep's success, that's and then we did it with Zidane and somehow had success season one. And then now everybody thinks that like that's the perfect formula. And yeah, I think it's going to happen with Xavi. I think it's probably going to happen with Raul. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you guys hired Xavi. I wouldn't be surprised in like a year or two, Raul is the manager and we have Raul versus Xavi, which that would actually be pretty cool to see.
If Xavi's around in 2 years, if he gets hired, like,
yes,
the next month, then that would be a miracle.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I think you guys you're having our post Cristiano Ronaldo 2018, 2019 season where we went through three managers, Lopetegui, Solari, and then Zidane.
Yeah, we've been having this for 3 years.
Yeah, but no, you still guys have been competing though.
Yeah.
Like I think this year is going to be your 2018, 2019 season, which we had. And maybe a little bit worse. I don't know where we were in October, but like we lost 5-1 to you guys in October and then Lopetegui got fired right after that. I think we definitely finished like third that season. I think third or fourth.
Yeah, you were third. I'm just like,
yeah,
up. Yeah. But you were like 20 points behind Barcelona.
Yeah, in October we were kind of in a similar position to what you guys are now. I think.
Crazy. Okay. Well, my two cents. I honestly, at this point, I just have no care who they hire, because I'm gonna be doing. I've been doing these podcasts for the last 18 months or whatever. And it's just the same cycle. It's just who's the next guy in that I'm going to have to talk about, why he's on the hot seat, and then he's going to get backed again. And then, like with Koeman, there were, I think, like at least three times in this season already where it was like, all right, the next three matches are very important.
Yeah.
But like those are the reports that were coming out. But yet the stuff that was coming out of kind of the leadership's mouth was like, he's our guy. But then it kept being like, oh, well, these next three matches are important. It's like, okay. Nobody really. And I feel like if they could have gotten Xavi during the summer, I think they would have. I just, for some reason, it makes, like, I feel like he didn't want to come. That's the only reason I think they gave Koeman a backing, only to fire him 3 months later and now Xavi might come.
It's weird. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, at the end of the day, like, Barcelona is in transition. Like, everybody knows it. They've had to deal, they had to get things right on the financial end first before they can move forward and build the club up again. And Laporta's having to undo everything Bartomeu screwed up. And like, it really is incredible, the reign that Bartomeu had and what he did at Barcelona. Like, it should be a case study on how not to run a club. He was that bad. And it's, I think, like, it's going to take 2-3 years. I mean, I don't think it'll be quicker than that until Barcelona is like ready to compete for Champions Leagues again and like is on the right financial footing and everything like that. And I just think fans, maybe they don't want to hear it, but from an outsider's perspective, like, it's just, you're going to have to probably be patient for a little bit.
No, and it's like the Band-Aid should have been ripped off way sooner than it was.
Yeah.
In terms of the rebuild. And I guess I think of this, like, this is a very American, at least. I don't know if people in Spain think this way, but like from an American perspective, right? Like, when my teams rebuild that I root for, I don't want them to fire the manager every 18 months just because they have like a legendary name. Like, I'm a Michigan football fan. So like the college team, right? Like, we've been rebuilding for a while, as much as you can rebuild in college, and they've actually stuck it out with the coach. And it's like, it's built a relationship. And even though there's been controversy, and the fans sometimes want him, you know, fired as soon as something bad happens, they haven't. And at Barcelona, I just don't know. There's not really like a good, I guess Manchester United are the closest thing to a club with that level of expectation. That's gone through such turmoil, and they've had their own, and are going through their own managerial problems now. But it's like, I don't know. I just want them to stick with someone for a couple years to see that rebuild through. And it just feels like they're not capable of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for stability and just allowing someone to give them the confidence to do their job and trust them to do their job. And I think as much as fans may have criticized Koeman, like, he did bring through Gavi. He was playing Ansu Fati. He was playing like all these young guys and giving them an opportunity and kind of bringing through that next transition. And so there's no guarantee if Xavi comes in that he'll do that. I mean, I think he's probably a guy that will want to do that. But when the pressure starts coming and he has to win games, like, if you're not in the top four, I don't know that he's going to continue playing all those kids if when the pressure is real.
Yeah. And for all the, like, the weird stuff Koeman did with like the press conference where he talked about being the future of the club, or the club has a future because of me.
Yeah.
And like just all the strange stuff when he came out, you know, had like the press release that he read. Like you said, there was something to the fact that he was playing the youth. There was also something negative side to be said that anytime a Dutch player thought about leaving anywhere, Koeman was the first to sign him up. And now I have to write about Luke de Jong leaving probably every other week till January. So, yeah, I don't know. I just don't know what to think anymore. I'm just not excited to already, like, I should just start getting my podcasts ready for 6 months down the road when I'm already talking about Xavi being on the hot seat. I don't know. One more question about Real Madrid, and then we'll wrap it up. What do Real Madrid need to do to basically fortify their position as the best team in the league?
Well, if you remember last year when we spoke, I said our biggest problem was scoring goals. I don't think that's the issue anymore, which is nice. It's been a nice change of pace under Ancelotti. Like, we've been able to score goals. Obviously, the Osasuna tie was not a testament to what I'm saying right now. But for the most part this season, we've been overperforming our XG. We've been scoring a ton of goals. Benzema's been on fire. Vinicius has just taken it up a level. That's kind of revolutionized our attack. I think for Madrid to kind of capitalize on their squad and win the league and be the best team in the league, Ancelotti needs to get the press right. So what he's been doing for the early part of the season was he wanted this team to be a high pressing team. And the problem with that was like, it was just so disorganized, so dysfunctional that teams were playing right through us with ease. And so after the international break and our loss to Espanyol and to Sheriff, he pretty much pulled the press back and slowed it down and said, you know what, for Shakhtar and Barcelona, we're just going to basically play counterattack and we're not going to press. And it's been effective, but I think he's still got the itch and the desire and the belief that being a high pressing team creates better chances for you and is just how you win at the elite level. And so I think he's going to start pushing his foot forward again with the press. And so if he can get that right, we'll be successful this season. If not, it's probably going to be a trophy-less or at least La Liga-less season for us.
Okay, so I have been, since the start of the season, like Atletico were my favorites, right? They were the team that I was kind of like, I believe in them the most. They've done really nothing to prove me right so far. who... Are they the team you're the most scared of, or like, do you think like a Sevilla or even Sociedad for whatever reason could actually make a real title challenge?
I mean, I don't think Real Sociedad or Sevilla will be able to sustain a full title challenge, especially with their, they have the Europa League and Sevilla's obviously in the Champions League. So I think Europe will eventually, just the fatigue from being in those competitions and their smaller squads, I think that will eventually catch up to them. Atleti's so weird because they just go through, they've got a great team, but they always go through like these ups and downs, and you're never really like, every time you think, oh, okay, Atleti's figured it out, Joao Felix is playing great, Suarez is scoring the goals, then they go on like this terrible run. And so it's really hard to know with Atleti. Like last year they held on by the skin of their teeth because they won so many games in the beginning. And then in the middle of the second half of the season, they just completely fell apart and then won enough at the final few weeks to hold on. So I honestly think Real Madrid should win this, like without a doubt, should win this La Liga this year. And if they don't, it's a failure. But we haven't figured our own shit out. So I think it's probably going to be between us and Atleti. And honestly, I don't rule out Barca like competing for the title still. Like we'll see. Stop. It's still too early. It's
I know
still
you're
too early
on my podcast here, but you don't have to do that.
I'm serious.
I mean, and when I talked with Robbie from Into the Cauldron, that was one of the things we discussed was like, even though when Atleti have been at their best in years past, right? They've been like that defensive team and now they have so many attacking options. Like they're trying to figure out how to become that attack first team.
Yeah.
And it feels like towards the end of last year, they were still trying to figure that out and it didn't work out well. And now you added Griezmann back into the mix and they're still trying to figure it out. And so I don't know. I've kind of slowly come to change my mind that Real are probably the favorites, but if Atleti figure it out, they're definitely going to be the team that challenges you guys. It's just a matter of if they can.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay, cool. Well, Matt, thank you for joining me. Everyone check out the Managing Madrid podcast. They do amazing work over there. They've kind of, you guys have, in my opinion, set kind of the architecture for what SB Nation soccer podcast should look like. And so thank you guys for doing that. And yeah, that's all I got. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it, Josh. Thank you for the kind words and always fun to chat.